So our next speaker is Andrew Bierer. He is going to talk to us about the effect of dairy slurry injection on soil health and nitrogen cycling.
Good morning, and first I'd like to thank everyone for coming out and listening to my presentation this morning. I'm a graduate student at Virginia Tech, and my project has been looking at dairy slurry injection and tying it to soil health. To start off, for those of you that may not know, what is manure injection? Simply put, in no-till and conservation till environments, we're placing manure beneath the soil surface. I'm working specifically on liquid slurries, and this can be accomplished with several different types of injectors. There's shank-style injectors, disc-style injectors, and knife-style injectors. Dry substrates can also be put beneath the soil surface, like compost and poultry litter. Specifically today, I will be discussing the shallow disc-style injector seen on the left. This utilizes a fluted opening disc to open the soil, a furrow in the soil about 10 to 15 centimeters deep, behind which manure is applied in, and then two trailing discs closes that slit with 3 to 5 centimeters of soil. So we inject manure for three main reasons, really, and the first is to reduce odors. As our rural and urban communities intermix, we want to try to prevent tension between our farmers and our citizens. The second is agronomic. By decreasing ammonia volatilization, we can improve nitrogen use efficiency, and we have even seen this in the field, eliminate the need for side dress applications of nitrogen in corn. The third is environmental. By decreasing ammonia volatilization, first you decrease nitrogen deposition in our waterways, and you also decrease surface losses of nitrogen and phosphorus. So to look at these changes, I'm presenting two laboratory studies. The first I'm deeming the volatility chamber study, which you'll see why in a minute. We have two objectives in this. First, I wanted to show the scale of the decrease in ammonia loss from manure injection and its subsequent capture in the soil as plant available nitrogen. And the second is to tie into soil health by identifying microbial benefits of manure application method. To do this, we'll have a sample of soil first run through a volatility chamber experiment. At the end of that study, we can get a snapshot of soil nitrogen, and after which the same soils will be analyzed for microbial analyses using carbon mineralization and active microbial biomass. For this experiment, we had two soils. We have a clay soil and a sandy soil. Our three treatments are a surface application of manure, a simulated shallow disc injection of manure, and a no-treatment control. In this experiment, we placed 500 grams of soil into our jars with threaded tops so that lids can be placed on them and it will be airtight. Manure was applied to these samples at a common Virginia application rate of 56,000 liters per hectare, approximately 6,000 gallons per acre. Before being placed in the chambers, the moisture was adjusted to 70% of water holding capacity. These are the box chambers that these samples were run through. The jars were placed in these temperature-controlled boxes at 21 degrees Celsius. This is a forced air system where air is forced from a central pump through a manifold through some hemostats to humidify air entering the chambers. Once in the boxes, the air is forced through the sample jars, picking up any ammonia coming off of the soil. After passing through the jars, the air is then forced through our acid traps seen on the right. These bottles contain a weak phosphoric acid and trap any of the ammonia. Periodically throughout the study, we change these bottles so that we can get a curve of ammonia release from the samples. After the study, these acid traps were analyzed for ammonia on an XYZ Latchet auto sampler using the quick chem phenol method. The soils were dried and extracted with 2 molar potassium chloride and run for nitrate and ammonium using the salicylate flow injection analysis, again on a Latchet instrument auto sampler. A portion of the soil was retained wet, however, so that microbial experiments could be performed. My microbial experiments were done very similarly, so I'd like to talk about them at the same time. First, a small mass of soil is placed in a centrifuge tube that's airtight. We flush the headspace of that centrifuge tube with carbon dioxide-free air, and we incubate it for a period of time at 21 degrees Celsius. After that period of time, we take a sample of that headspace out and we analyze it for carbon dioxide on a LIGOR. For our carbon mineralization experiment, the incubation time was 24 hours, and we have readings at days 1, 5, 10, 20, and 30. This will give us 5 points in time of carbon dioxide released, and we can take the area underneath this curve to get one measure of labile carbon in the system. Our second study was our active microbial biomass. It's just a little bit different. We mix up a nutrient broth. In this case, we used an autolyzed yeast. We shake that with the soil for an hour, then we flush the headspace, incubate it for 5 hours, and take one reading from that. Because our first study only allowed us to see one snapshot of soil nitrate at the end of the volatility study, we decided to expand on that utilizing a 40-day incubation. And again, we would like to see how the nitrogen transformations differ over time between manure application method. To do this, we have our same two soils, the clay and sandy loam, our same three treatments, and this is a destructive sampling experiment, so we had 5 time periods, day 0, 7, 14, 28, and 40. And nitrate and ammonia was extracted using the same 2-molar potassium chloride extraction and autosampler use. This is a visualization of the 40-day incubation. 300 grams of soil was placed in these lined planter cups. Again, the manure was applied at the common Virginia application rate. The only thing different about this experiment is it's a static air conditioned system. There's no forced air, so we covered these pots with cellophane with holes in it to prevent moisture loss while allowing atmospheric exchange. They were adjusted to weight every 2 to 3 days as needed. And if there was any confusion about what that time zero sample was, it was merely dried and set out to dry immediately after all samples were prepared. All statistical analysis were performed at the alpha 0.05 level on JUMP. One-way ANOVA was run for each soil type, and means were compared using Tukey-Cramer. Our first graph here is the cumulative ammonia volatilized trapped by our acid traps. On the top, you can see our clay soil, and the bottom is our sandy soil. The scales are just a little bit different. We saw more atmospheric exchange with the sandy soil, as we would expect. What we really care about with this graph is on the far right. We like to look at the differences between our surface application and injection application. And here we see that our surface application was far and away higher than our injection. And our clay soil, our injection, was similar to the control. This was not statistically significant in our sandy soil, however, but the same trends are seen. The final thing I want to note about this graph is that, as you can probably tell, most of the ammonia volatilizes very quickly. These two bars indicate the point in time at which 90% of all ammonia volatilization had occurred in all treatments. I'm not normally a fan of tables, but I thought this was appropriate here. This table shows the amount of ammonia loss, the graph we just looked at, as well as the soil nitrogen that we measured after the experiment. So here it's a little bit easier to see the numeric differences between our surface and injection treatments. In our clay soil, our injection treatment actually reduced ammonia volatilization by 97%, and in our sandy soil, this was 87%. And we can see that what manure injection saves in ammonia loss turns up in plant available nitrogen. In our sandy soil, we can see here that it was statistically different than our surface treatment. This statistical difference did not carry over with our clay soil. However, I believe that this is due to much of that nitrogen still being bound up as ammonium in our clay soil, so more tightly holding on to that. On the far right, this is just a total amount of nitrogen captured by our system, our acid traps plus our soil nitrogen, and this was just a check to make sure we applied similar amounts of nitrogen across treatments. Unfortunately, being in the soil health section, our results on soil health were not as fruitful as I would have liked. This is the graph of our carbon mineralization data, in which we see that on average our surface treatment had more carbon mineralization than our injection and control treatments. This was statistically different in our sandy soil. However, this was not the same in our clay soil. There's too much variation within treatment. I would have expected injection to increase the amount of carbon mineralized, but this was not seen. A hypothesis to why this may have occurred is because this was performed after our forced air volatility chamber trials. Since that was a forced air system, air was being pumped into these sample jars, and we believe that that might have dried out and made some of the carbon of the surface application unavailable until this was performed. Our active microbial biomass estimates were even less fruitful. You hate to see it, but it is what it is. We did not detect statistical differences in either soil in any treatment. The one takeaway we could get from this, at least one thing, is that our clay soil had more microbial biomass than our sandy soil, so at least we saw that. This is our first graph of our second study, our 40-day incubation, which only shows the clay soil. On the bottom is the soil ammonia, and on the top is the soil nitrate. We can see as our soil ammonia is decreasing, we're increasing in soil nitrate due to nitrification. We can see that on day 28, we start detecting statistical differences between our injection and surface applications of manure. And those differences held through till day 40, the final day of our study. An injection actually increased the amount of soil nitrate by 26%. The final thing to note that I thought was neat about this is that, approximately 200 to 250 milligrams per kilogram of nitrate was found in day 40 in our injection and surface treatments. And we can see that approximately 100 milligrams per kilogram is coming from that ammonia pool, and that the rest must be coming from the organic pool of nitrogen. Our second figure with the sandy soil is very similar. We can see that the ammonia decrease happens fairly quickly, and that's due to more atmospheric exchange in that soil. The differences, again, started appearing in soil nitrate on day 28, and those differences did carry out through day 40. And injection increased the amount of soil nitrate in this soil by 13%. So in conclusion, we were able to show that the scale of the reduction in ammonia loss by manure injection, we were able to show that this reduction carries over to increased plant available nitrogen. However, we were not able to prove that there was any benefits to soil microorganisms. It was inconclusive. I would like to say that this was just a lab trial. I do suspect we may see differences if these soils were continually injected or surface applied with manure, and hopefully our field studies will show that. We will continue to explore different avenues to investigate soil health and soil microorganisms in manure injection since we did not get the results we wanted. And to sum up or to end here, I would like to thank Virginia Tech, my advisor, Dr. Rory McGuire, all the members of my committee, and my peers at Virginia Tech, and my funders, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. Thank you. Yes.
You implied, I think, that high CO2 mineralization would be an indicator of good soil health. If that is the case, isn't that then implying that organic matter loss is also an indicator of good soil health? In other words, CO2 mineralization is the mechanism whereby soil carbon is lost. So you cannot have both high soil CO2 mineralization and high preservation of soil carbon. Any thoughts about that?
Okay, so the question is, why do we look for higher carbon mineralization if that would then indicate a decrease or a loss of soil organic matter? In this experiment, I was trying to look at the rate of carbon mineralization, right? So we had to measure over 5 days, and we come up with the measure. And to me, to increase the carbon mineralization would be beneficial, I think. I'm sorry, I'd have to think about that.
What is the typical moisture content of your slurry?
The typical moisture content of the manure applied, it's a 94% moisture. Sure. Yes?
How did the incubation know when you
No, yes, we did simulate the manure injection. To do this, we had an unwet soil first, to which we pried it apart with some metal plates, in which we poured the manure, and then we removed those plates and loosely covered it with the soil, and then they were brought to the 70% water holding capacity with any additional moisture that was needed.
So your samples represent manure or soil or some combination? How did you sample that? Go back to your photo.
So I believe here is the pictorial description of how we simulated the manure injection. This was for the volatility study. After that volatility study, the soils were homogenized before the microbial analysis were performed.
So you didn't really look at the microbial analysis of injected manure, because you get a very high ammonia concentration,
So I think the question is, could we better look at the effects of manure injection on how that might affect the soil microorganisms? And I will admit that that was a lapse in our study, is that this was done at the end of a 14-day volatility experiment. And yes, there are plans to start looking at the effects to microbes right after manure application.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.